Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Bulky Blue podcast. And today is going to be the Chelsea versus Fulham preview. Before I actually get into that, we did get the draw for the FA Cup. Fourth round and fifth round. So I'm going to start off, go through the draw quickly, the entire draw. Cheltenham versus Man City, Bournemouth versus Crawley, Swansea versus Nottingham Forest, Man United versus Liverpool. Just a quick thing on that. I said before, after the Morecambe game, before the draw, that there's always a glamour tie. Guaranteed. There's always one match that'll bring in a lot of attention. And Man United versus Liverpool is that one this round. You're going to have Southampton and Shrewsbury versus Arsenal. Barnsley versus Norwich. Chorley versus Wolves. Millwall versus Bristol City. Brighton versus Blackpool. Wickham versus Spurs. That would be cool. I'd like to see Akinfenwa against some of Spurs centre backs to actually bully them. Fulham versus Burnley in an all Premier League tie. Sheffield United versus Plymouth. Chelsea versus Luton. West Ham versus Doncaster. Brentford versus Leicester. And Everton versus Sheffield Wednesday. So that was the fourth round. They also did the fifth round as well. Each of them matches, they numbered from 1 to 16. And then they drew, well, Peter Crouch drew the numbers out of the pot. So, for example, if it was drawn number 1, it would be tie number 1 versus tie number 8, for example. So, we had tie 11 versus tie 2, which was either Fulham or Burnley versus Bournemouth or Crawley. Then tie 4 versus tie 14, which was Man United or Liverpool versus West Ham or Doncaster. Then we had Sheffield United or Plymouth versus Millwall or Bristol. Chorley or Wolves versus Southampton, Shrewsbury or Arsenal, because the Southampton-Shrewsbury match hasn't been decided yet. So in the fifth round for us, if we go through, if we beat Luton, we'll be playing either Barnsley or Norwich away. Everton or Sheffield Wednesday versus Wickham or Spurs. Swansea or Nottingham Forest versus Cheltenham or Man City. And Brentford or Leicester versus Brighton or Blackpool. So, I mean, if providing we go through, we've got either Barnsley or Norwich in the next round. And to be fair, no disrespect, but against Luton in the fourth round, we really should be beating them. So that is the FA Cup draw. But without further ado, let's get into the Chelsea versus Fulham preview. I'm going to go over Lampard's press conference. There's a bit that was addressed in the press conference that I want to speak about at the end. But he got asked about team news. Kante is suspended through the 5 yellow cards, which we knew. So he also said that there was no injuries, which means Reece is back. So that's always going to be a positive sign. Also means the likes of Pulisic, Ziyech, guys who have had injury troubles lately are okay. He then got asked about the rivalry between Fulham and Chelsea. And he said, of course, it's a derby. So, like, the Fulham players are going to be up for it, our players are going to be up for it, etc. But he said it's a different kind of derby. There's not that animosity and hatred. I mean, obviously, there's passion to win, but there's not that. It's not like how we hate Tottenham. So, I don't know. It's a friendly derby. In the sense of there's no real fight. And by that I mean there's no, well, no hatred, basically. We go in, we turn up, we play our game, we go home. Whereas against the likes of Spurs, we go in, we play the match, there's dirty tackles flying in all over the place. There's yellow cards, red cards. The fans absolutely hate each other. So the one good thing that actually wasn't mentioned in the press conference and is the fact that Ruben can't play for them against us. So, I mean, it'll be the fact that I'd say he's one of their best players. It can only be a positive. A thing was mentioned that we've also been unbeaten against Fulham in the league since 2006. So that's probably just jinxed the result. But ultimately, we need to be focused on what we're doing and focus on being our best, which is what Lampard said as well. Got asked about the reaction since the Morecambe game. And he turned around and said that basically the players did have good reactions and that we're focused. And then he got asked about the pressure of his job and all that. And he said that he feels fine about it, that he understands the pressure and that it's part of his job. Like, he knew it coming in. Like, he had it last year, he had it during the good run, the bad run, everything. He understood the pressure of what his job entails. But he also turned around and said that it actually helps him keep focused. Because he knows that he has to be his very best. Otherwise, he's going to, like, basically lose his job. And, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing, keeping focused. So, who knows? And then he pointed out that Fulham have then drawn against Liverpool and Spurs this season, so they're not going to be a walkover. I'm just, like, bolting through my notes quickly here. He got asked about Werner's performances since the goal drought and then up until Morecambe. He said, Lampard says that he feels that his performances have been quite good. It's clear as day. He clearly prefers starting up front. He pointed out that other signings for other clubs in the league get pushed in slowly, and that they have the time to feel their way into the league, feel how the team wants to play and all that. And he pointed out that with Timo and the other players in our squad that we bought, they didn't have that. They got brought in to influence our starting 11 straight away. And they got basically chucked in at the deep end. I've got no doubts personally. Lampard hasn't got any doubts that Werner will become exceptional. And basically that we need to be patient because it will come. It will happen. Werner, Havertz, all of them, they're too good of a player for it to not happen, you know? So there's that. And he got asked about Tomori, if he has a future at the club, long term. And Lampard said, in short words, yeah, he does. He's very much in his plans for the future. He did say if and when he goes on loan. So that's indicating to me that he's definitely going on loan. Rumour has it it's AC Milan. And another rumour is that they've got an option to buy. which I think is crazy. Because Tomori is a great centre-back. Like, he's got all the attributes. He's tall, he's quick, he's strong, he can header a ball, he can pass a ball. I think he's a brilliant defender, personally. But at the end of the day, if he is another one that slips through our fingers, then who knows? But just quickly on transfers, another name we've been linked to is Deo Upamecano from Leipzig. Personally, I think he's another one who is a very good defender. But if you ask me, who I'd rather sign, my first choice centre back is Jimenez from Atletico Madrid. My second choice would have been Milan Skriniar from Inter. But at the end of the day, it's one of those. Like, I've openly said that Chilwell wasn't my first choice, but I backed him because Lampard wanted him, and it will be the same. Like, if we get Upamecano, I'm not going to just sit there and go, no, I don't want him, I'm not going to support him. No, he plays for my club, so I'm going to support him. So that's... I've missed one bit out of the press conference in particular, because as I said, I'm going to talk about it in a bit. But moving into the lineup that I will go with, given the suspensions, the team news, like the injury news that we've got, which was none. Mendy in goal. Yes, Kepa kept a clean sheet. Was a good save to keep it at 0-0. But Mendy's our first choice keeper. Mendy in goal. Back four. If he's fully fit, Reece James, right back. Just has to be. As good as Aspie is, he's played two matches in a week. Like, he's played two full 90 minutes last two matches. And are his legs up to it? That's what I want to know. Ben Chilwell, left back. Again, pretty self-explanatory. He's our best left back. Centre-backs, Zuma, Silva. And again, I don't really need to explain why they're our best two centre-backs. I think Thiago can do quite well against Mitrovic if he's playing, because I don't know who's available for them or not, because they've got isolation and positive tests and all that. Now, that's my back five. Our best back five, in my opinion. It's moving forward into the midfield, where people have been disagreeing on multiple different lineups. We're going to go 4-3-3. A lot of people are saying that they reckon Jorginho is going to be the one in front of the back four. However, personally, I'd rather play Gilmore. So in my starting 11, Billy is in that base in front of the back four. In front of him, Kai and Mason. Got to be Havertz and Mount. Has to be. Havertz was, granted, it was Morecambe. He was brilliant against them. And he deserves a start. A goal and an assist. Not to mention those very two they were towering headers for both of them. Like, if he can get in the box in and around Timo, who I've got as my striker, they can cause havoc. So I've got Mason in as well. Again, he's going to start. He's been one of our most consistent performers lately. Get the job done. Get him off after 60 minutes. Rest him a bit. But then also, we've had a week off. So, or 6 days. But, so I think he'll play a full 90 personally. I don't know when our next match is. I need to check. But, my front three, Timo up front. He scored against Morecambe. Let him build on it. Simple as. ZS right wing. Again, pretty self-explanatory. He's our strongest right winger. Now, left wing's a tricky one. On ability, I believe Pulisic's our best player. But on merit, Hudson-Odoi deserves a start. So personally, I've gone Hudson-Odoi. I know. Don't shoot the messenger. I think Hudson-Odoi, he deserves a start. Because I don't know what else he can do. Every time he's come in lately, he has looked superb. He's scoring. He's assisting. He's getting himself in the right places to do both of them things. He's taking on defenders. He's running at them. He's not scared. And I know Pulisic isn't as well, but I don't know that. As I said, I think he deserves a start. And if after 60 minutes, it's still a tight game, bring him off. Bring on Pulisic, or bring off Ziyech, bring on Pulisic, and then swap him over, or whatever it may be. But yeah, he deserves a start. He really does. So that is my lineup. My score prediction is going to be 4-1. Werner Brace. And yeah, I know I'm going bold. Werner Brace. I think Havertz will get an assist as well. So I want to move on to the main issue here. And it was the thing that I left out of the podcast, of the press conference section. Lampard got asked about COVID protocols in football. Because there was a meeting, apparently, between managers and captains and the board of the Premier League about what clubs are doing to keep players and staff safe or something like that. And then it determines on whether the government is going to shut down football or not. He turned around and said that they're doing the best they can to follow the protocols. Because he then turned around and said that it's not simple to remove the instinct and passion out of football in regards to celebrating goals. Right? And that's the issue I want to get into. An ITV news reporter, she asked him, like, or said that it sounds sort of arrogant, as if footballers don't have to apply to the rules. And to, like, what Frank said, like, he basically shut that down immediately. He went, well, people being asked to work remotely from home, footballers aren't. They're actually being asked to go out there and do their job, because they are human after all. And then come back to what Lampard was saying, a pregnant wife, a grandparent, parent, brother, sister, etc. So, on that respect, I do agree with Lampard. I agree with Lampard totally, actually. In regards to, you can't take the passion out of football, because it's engraved in your brain, it's instinct. When a player scores, it's way too difficult to just sit there and go, you know what? No, fuck it. I'm just going to go back to halfway line. Didn't happen. Oh, well. Ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. A lot's been made lately of players hugging each other when they're celebrating goals. Now, my big thing on this is, first and foremost, work bubble. If you have a, you can have a work bubble and a support bubble. Right? They're in their work bubble. So what's the problem? They're only playing if they've got a negative test. Because if they're positive, they're straight home. So again, what's the problem? They're out there entertaining millions of people countrywide. God knows how many worldwide. And all right, they're hugging after celebrating a goal with people who are also negative tested, like they are. But they can't hug, they're not allowed to hug celebrating a goal. But they can mark each other on corners. They can tackle each other. It makes no sense. They train together. They work together. They're friends with each other. So at the end of the day, of course they're going to celebrate together when they score. It's going to happen. You can't take passion out of football. It's bad enough you've already taken fans away from football. And I understand the reasoning why, so let's not get that twisted. But at the end of that, you cannot kill passion in football. Because then what happens? What happens then? You start booking players for celebrating. You start sending them off because they cheered too loudly when they scored. Like, it's getting ridiculous now. And at the end of the day, as I've said, they're being tested multiple times a week. If they're even remotely positive, they're straight home and they're isolating. Like, I don't understand it. Yet, I do understand that they hold, like, footballers hold a value in being role models. But you look at hugging a celebration, fair enough. But everyone still holds Jack Grealish in high esteem. Yeah, what did he do first lockdown? Drunk driving, crashed his Range Rover. A couple of the Man City boys got breaking protocol. Again, multiple times they've done it. One hit the newspapers the other week about a cocaine-fueled sex orgy. Like, at the end of the day, other players are doing a lot worse than hugging a celebration, like in goal celebration. Nothing gets mentioned. It just hits pages, front pages for a day, and it goes away. But oh no, God forbid. Bid you hug your negative tested teammates after scoring a goal, you know? As I said, you could sit there and mark each other in a corner when you've got like 10 people in the space of 6 yards and they're all grabbing each other's shirts, marking each other, like shielding each other, blocking each other. Nothing gets mentioned. Corners, it's fine. But you hug after scoring a goal. I don't get it. I really don't get it. As I said, it's just gone crazy. The sooner it's over, the better. Honestly, the sooner it's over, the better. I was having this discussion with Dad yesterday, actually. It was actually yesterday. Because he thinks it won't be this calendar year until we get fans back. I said this season, I think this season will be all behind closed doors, and then after major vaccinations and the summer and whatnot, we'll come back in August and we'll allow fans in, even if it's at a closed, like a small capacity, like what we did in December for a couple of weeks. It's better than nothing, because 2,000 fans, 4,000 fans, whatever it may be, can make a hell of a lot of noise, as we found out against Everton. And ultimately, the footballers are there to do their job, and their job right now is entertaining millions of people during a difficult period. And if they can't even have that one little bit of love for the game that they love doing, granted they get paid vast sums of money to do it, but that's irrelevant. They're still passionate about it. They still love playing football. And if people want to take away that one little spark of passion and happiness that's left, the game's gone. It'll be completely ruined until we get fans back in stadiums. Completely ruined. Because when a goal goes in, for example, if we score later today, I'll be watching it, fist pumping, chanting, yes! Like loud, probably scaring the life out of my dad accidentally. Like, it is. So if I'm passionate at home, just like millions of people are, and this ain't just a Chelsea thing now. This is football in general. Like millions of people are across the country and billions across the world. When their team scores a goal, the way I see it personally, if players want a hug after celebrating a goal, given the fact that the players playing are all negative tested, that is in they've been tested and got a negative result, then, as I said, I personally don't see an issue with it. Like, I want to see it. Because it's that sense of normality. It's that sense of hope. That things can get back to normal. Things will go back to fans back in stadiums and cheering like an absolute nutcase when your team scores a 91st minute winner. And it's like, because that one was brought up, I don't think it was in the press conference. Might have been a conversation I had, actually. But it was, you're hugging and, or you're not allowed to hug your teammates when you score. And this was like ultimate case scenario here, right? So it's last day of the season. Chelsea versus Liverpool, just for argument's sake, for the title. The winner gets the title. The match is 1-1. And in the 91st minute, so in the first minute of stoppage time, we go up, we score the winner, we win the title. Do people really expect the players not to hug each other? Or go bonkers? Because personally, I'd expect it. And if they didn't, I'd think, do you even care? when in reality, they're just being told to follow orders. Like, it's going to be a difficult one, because, as I said, if they stop hugging, something so simple as hugging, it would kill passion in the game. And that, for me, is what football is all about. On match days, you go there, you have a few drinks, you speak to people who also love your club, and you go, you watch the match, and after the match, you're back in the pub, or you're going home, and you're singing, you're chanting, you're in the stadium giving limbs, and there's nothing better, in my opinion, than an enthusiastic crowd. Gives you goosebumps. It really does. Champions League nights at home are immense. Spurs matches, having the Liquidator playing and all the crowd guy, "We hate Tottenham." Like the clapping, "We hate Tottenham," and then followed by the roar of shouting "Chelsea" at the top of your lungs. Passion can never leave football. And if it does, the game's done. But that is going to end it here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. If you did enjoy it, please give me a follow on Twitter at CookCO4. COOKEC04. And give me a share around as well. That'd be very much appreciated. And until next time, blue is the colour. And goodbye.